Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Male Fertility Podcast. Slightly different from normal. I had the privilege last week of sitting down with Ollie Brown, also known as Marathons for Miracles, to discuss my up and coming marathon with him. We discussed my experience of miscarriage, how that sat within my fertility journey. Yeah, and really delved into what that experience taught me. So we've got a collaboration this week. We are going to be sharing Ollie's podcast on the Male Fertility Podcast. So sit back and enjoy.
2026 sees me travel the length and breadth of England to run a marathon per week in each of its 39 historic counties. Why? To raise funds for Tommy's, the charity that does incredible work to try to end the heartbreak of baby loss. I'll be joined each week by someone who has their own story of loss, their own rollercoaster journey, their own reason to be there. This podcast shares those stories in the hope that they can bring awareness to an often undiscussed topic and even, perhaps, a flicker of light in someone's darkness. You can follow the runs, the stories, and donate to the cause at marathonsformiracles.com. Enjoy. Hello, welcome to another week, Marathons for Miracles, week 12. We are on to, this week, Bedfordshire, which is not far from home for me, really. Back, we're in the first one in the east, moving towards my roots. But we are, it's a bit of a meet your heroes moment. So I feel like we're back where it all began. We're joined this week by Kieran, who is part of Nexus for Fertility and, more relevant to this, the Male Fertility Podcast, where I did my first podcast ever, but certainly my first podcast relating to Marathons for Miracles. So I've just sat and given Kieran a briefing about how the podcast works, and I felt like a complete fraud because he's been doing it for years and I got the same speech from him 6 months ago, whatever it was. Here we are. But yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to have Kieran on this week. Obviously a huge personal story to tell, but also wealth of experience within this space and supporting others, and an interesting running journey as well, if we can call it that. So much to unpack, but Kieran, thank you so much for being on.
Oh mate, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me. It doesn't seem long ago you jumped on our pod, and it all was right at the beginning of things, eh? But it's an absolute pleasure. Yeah. I'm going to say it straight from the top, mate. Like, what you're doing is incredible. And yeah, before we came on, we talked about it, didn't we? And I really take my hat off to you, mate. Like, 39 weeks in a row. As we said, I've been preparing for this 1 week. Yeah. And you're smashing 39 out, mate. Yeah, amazing. But thanks for having me on, and I'm looking forward to the discussion, an important one.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah, it was June, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was fairly soon after we kicked off that you reached out, and I felt like we made it. We got a podcast invite, and it was a real step forward for us and great exposure. And obviously, one recruit along the way as well. We picked you up straight off there and then on the podcast, I think, didn't we?
That's it. Sean, how can I put it? He didn't throw me under the bus, but he made it like, he put it out on Instagram. Yeah. Kieran, you should be doing this. Get your running shoes ready. As soon as I saw it, it was never going to be a no. It was soon as I saw what you were doing, it was like, for reasons we'll go into at some point, this is probably the toughest thing I've done for a very long time. I was never going to say no. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the 14th of March, where I get to test myself, but also do something for the guys that need it, guys and girls that need it. And that's the important bit.
So let's dive in. You mentioned there, for reasons that we will discuss, what are the reasons? What led you to be involved in Marathons for Miracles and the cause that we're supporting?
Well, there's kind of two reasons why. There's the main one in terms of, obviously, I myself went through 3 miscarriages. One, which was particularly difficult for the circumstances, but 2, also for how lonely I felt while I was going through it. For listeners, obviously, that are listening, I went through quite a difficult fertility journey. 14 years ago, I was diagnosed with male factor infertility. It was a surprise. We weren't expecting it. Me and my wife had been trying for children for a while, and she had polycystic ovaries, so we assumed it was her side of things. And then just before they gave her the medication for everything, Clomid, they were going to give her, they just say, look, Kieran, we'll just test you. Didn't, no one expected anything to come back. And it did. I had very low sperm count, morphology, motility. So the way the sperm look and how they move was very poor. And that kind of was the first step onto, say, the fertility ladder for us. And through that, we had several cycles and sadly experienced miscarriages along the way. And it was hard. It was incredibly hard. At the time, even though Tommy's was about, as a man, I just wanted to look after my wife. But there was also a deep level of, I guess I can only explain it as guilt, because with every miscarriage, with every failed cycle, there was that thought in the back of my head where we're going through this because of me. And it hits you differently when you sat there 4 o'clock in the morning because your wife's had a miscarriage and you just don't know what to say. And it's in the back of your head that this is my fault. Even though it wasn't, it was nature doing its course. I'm a firm believer in that now. And I took that kind of narrative quite early, but it didn't make it any easier. It was one of those deeply psychological factors I had to get over or just process. Yeah. So we had our first cycle, which we had not very much success with.
Just to clarify, we're in IVF cycles.
Yeah, ICSI cycles. So we had ICSI and we had our first cycle, which I always have to get this the right way around. But our first cycle and it took, so we were pregnant and then we told everyone and very early because we were so pleased because we've been trying for a while. And then we found out Boxing Day that Jen had miscarried. And that was a tough one, real tough one. I was caught in the middle of...
This is the second week in a row we've had this. I miscarried last week on Father's Day.
Yeah.
Yours on Boxing Day. It just seems that all these things, they have a way of finding the wrong time, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a poignant date, isn't it, in society. And like we had got in our heads that this by this time next Christmas, we'd be parents. And the next year was going to be the most magical year we've ever had. It's happened first time and it was great. And it was going to be this beautiful story. And then on Boxing Day, it was very evident. And my wife Jen called me into the toilet and it was very evident things weren't going to plan. And of course, it's Boxing Day, like the fertility clinics aren't open. So we had to navigate out on our own, and what made it even harder was the fact of we were due to go to my mum's and there was going to be a big family party. And we had a 5-hour drive to my mum's because she lived in Devon at the time. And we didn't talk much during that trip. And there was the thing of, do we even go? But we thought it was the right thing. We didn't want it to be people that have, I think, been through fertility treatment often want to, you don't want to say no because then you're different. And then you've got to make an excuse of why you can't, especially with something like miscarriage. So we ended up going and after 5 hours of being in the car and several stops because things were happening while we were like traveling. My wife disappeared upstairs and I was left in between explaining to family why she'd gone upstairs but not telling the full truth. And then I was getting it like a very emotional wife for clear reasons and then a very concerned family for different reasons. And it was hard as a guy. Your wife's upstairs crying and your family's downstairs asking why she's not about and different types of pressures from the same household.
Yeah.
After a few days, though, we processed it together and, just took the next steps as we needed. Then we had another cycle and things didn't take. So we actually ended up having a fresh and a frozen. So you can have your embryos frozen.
Yeah.
Neither of those took. And then my mental health had got to quite a point where I was really struggling because of my identity and my lack of identity, I should say, maybe with my fertility. It really hit me as a guy.
Yeah.
If I can't give my wife the one thing that she truly wants, what worth was I? And you throw in the miscarriage as well on that difficult point in time. And it was incredibly challenging for me to the point, and I do say it now, and for it took me a long time to get to the point where I was comfortable in saying it out loud. But after that second cycle, the frozen had failed. Like I got so low that I just didn't see the point of me being here. Like I was suicidal and it was very difficult. And the miscarriage played a part in that. No, it really did because I held on to it. I couldn't let anyone see how I truly was feeling and how I was processing it. I felt like a failure.
Because if that miscarriage hadn't happened,
it would have.
You end up with, you get the fairy tale that you want and your fertility issues whilst still there, somehow become less significant.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't. They don't. It wouldn't have mattered. But
yeah, of course.
You know, that miscarriage was a major card in the game we were playing. And that's what it felt like at some points, because you don't know if you're going to win or lose. So we decided to step off the fertility roller coaster for 18 months. And I started to look into looking after myself and try and making those lifestyle habits that they tell you about the fertility clinic, but don't give you any more information on. So you're as confused as when you start. But we put things together, got ourselves on track, and after about 18 months we were ready to go again. So we knew this was going to be our final chance, so it was our third kind of what you call fresh cycle of and we went for the treatment and we did the test after 2 weeks and we were pregnant. It was like, this is amazing. Like we felt in a good place. And then we went, we had an early scan at 7 weeks, and which was an option for us because of the ICSI and obviously the fertility treatment.
Yeah.
And we were blessed with the fact that there was two heartbeats. It was two. And it felt like everything was in the right place. Life was good. Life was really good. We were still optimistic because you'd never truly know what's going to happen, but we felt good. I think we had another one at 9 weeks, all going well. And then the next one we were due to have was 12 weeks. So we went, and this is the big one, isn't it? If you can get through this one, it's all going to be all right, generally, statistically, as you've spoken about previously. And we got there, and there was only one heartbeat, and the other bubby had died, and died recently. They predicted it was within the week because of its size. And it was hard. That was incredibly difficult there. Like within a split second, every fear I'd previously had came rushing back. This is happening again. This can't happen again. I can't cope with this again. And the team there were amazing. The team were there were amazing. They obviously, Jen sorted herself out in terms of after the scan, and we left the room, the scan room, and Jen walked across the hallway into another room, and one of the nurses could see that I was, I wasn't. And she stopped me and asked me if I was all right. And I said, no, I'm not really. And she gave me a big hug and I cried. I just stood in the hallway. There's people walking around everywhere. I just cried.
Yeah.
But she got me together, this amazing woman, one of these amazing nurses that do such incredible jobs.
Just appear and then gone. And you'll never know who it was.
She wasn't in the room during the scan. She was outside, and I think they'd communicated that hadn't gone to plan. And when I went back into the room that Jen had entered, I could then be the husband I needed to be, because someone had acknowledged the fact that I was struggling, and that previously hadn't happened. And I'd allowed myself to be acknowledged. That's a massive thing, I think, for men. Like, it's all right to go, I need some support, I need some help here. But I'd learned that from my own experience, from getting so close to the edge. I couldn't afford to not be open. But it was that fear. It was like a double-ended sword. We've lost one, but we've still got one. There was still one bubby in there that was growing and growing well.
Was it fairly, sorry to cut in just whilst we're here, was it fairly immediately obvious that the other one that was still alive was going to be okay? Because that was mine. You mentioned sort of the emotions all come flooding back. There's obviously at that point that you've lost one of the twins.
Yeah.
But surely there's got to be, you never know how these things are going to develop and what effect it's going to have on the other one.
No.
And if you have to somehow terminate that pregnancy, do you have to terminate both? And I've got those questions and those emotions flying through my head now, just listening back to the story. So I can't imagine what it was like in the room there and then.
No one could tell us what would happen. No one could tell us what was going to happen, because there were several options. Just several ways it could go.
Possibilities.
Possibilities. And what we left that hospital with was, it stays as nothing, we don't change anything unless there's an obvious reason why, in terms of bleeding and loss, pain, something like that. And it never came. It never came. So we didn't then get another scan until 20 weeks. It's a long time to think what's going on. But me and Jen we tried to be as down to earth as possible with it, in terms of, this is what they've told us to look out for. if it occurs, we'll stress about it. If it doesn't occur, we just take one step, one day at a time. If we felt heartbroken because we'd lost one of our children. That's what it felt. It was. That's what happened on that day.
Yeah. But that's not what it felt like.
That is what happened. But we still had one, which in itself was a gift and a miracle. So it was a case of let's do everything we can for the one that we know is there. So we ended up going for 20-week scan, and straight away they were like, yep, there's baby. And then we were like, where's the other one? And we were saying that there was two. And what had happened was my son, Seb, who obviously he was born and is currently upstairs asleep, but he had absorbed the other baby. So it was called a vanishing twin. And I was just like, what?
Yeah.
Like the body is incredible. And he had absorbed it, and it had, nature had done its course in the best possible way. And I still don't fully understand it. I don't know how that happens, because there was a heartbeat and there was everything that you'd anticipate a baby to be and develop in.
It was only just before the 12-week point that it had happened.
Lost another one. It happened.
And anyone who's had a 12-week scan, been fortunate enough to have a sort of a healthy 12-week scan, will know that the baby at that point is like, it's a human bit.
Yeah.
It's got arms, legs, it's got a head, it's got a brain, it's got a tummy, a stomach, it's got ears, eyes. Like,
it's starting to.
It's not like a clump of cells that another clump of cells has merged with, is it? I remember when you first told me this story, and I'd never heard of vanishing twin syndrome before. Yeah. And I was like, I hope you don't take this offensively because it's your kid's centric, but that is flipping mental. Yeah. Do you know, like the fact that can happen is just insane.
It is. And it's something that's not really spoken about much. Like our second twin literally was absorbed by its twin.
Yeah.
So that was another thing to get our heads around, like what had happened. And Jen did a lot of looking into it and explained things to me and stuff. But we were just thankful that Seb was all right.
Yeah.
And then things went on and he arrived a little bit early. So he arrived at 35 weeks and 6 days. So he was a bit early. Yeah. And I think to myself, actually, was he a bit early because he had absorbed twin? Did that just quicken up his development? I don't know. But we don't know. But he arrived early. He was on Skaboo for a bit because he was a bit unwell. He was in hospital for another week, and he had jaundice and a few other things, but he's a fighter and he fought through it all, and we brought him home, and I distinctly remember holding him the first time and just thinking, oh, my man, he's here. It was a real special moment. But there's that side of me that it was after he was born, I started to process what had truly happened. And I had a lot of questions about twin and why they didn't survive. And once again, was it something to do with me? Was it something to do with the quality of semen I produced? I don't know, but there was a lot of questions in my head, and I started to have like panic attacks to the point where I had panic attacks and I started to become quite antisocial in terms of I didn't want to socialize much and I wanted to just be at home trying to process it all. It was almost like because we got to the end of what we perceived our fertility journey and just having a child, the floodgates opened. And the miscarriages, like I've said previously, it was a major part of that, and questions that I just couldn't have answers to. And now I know that's okay. It's all right not to have the answers. We're not supposed to know the answer to everything. And I think for me, that kind of helped steady the ship mentally for me. What really saved me was when COVID came in. Like, it meant I was free how many months at home with the family. I completely reset. And part of that is when I really started to look at supporting other men through their fertility challenges, but also addressing the deeper side of the emotions that I was feeling. And one of those was definitely linked to miscarriage. Quite a journey, man.
Deep breath. It is a hell of a journey.
Yeah.
And as ever, I'm so grateful to you for sharing it. And we'll go on to talk about more what you touched on there at the end about supporting other men through fertility journeys and the work that you've done. And as a result of that, I know that you are fairly familiar with talking about these issues and familiar with sharing your story and being open about these things. But it never that never belittles the magnitude of the topics that you're covering.
No.
I think one of the things that we're trying to do with this whole challenge and the conversations we're having is to shine a light on a lot of these things. And for people who, I don't know if anyone listens to this podcast, will stop.
They do.
But I don't
know if anyone
listens to this podcast outside of people who are looking for answers around loss. Mm-hmm. But this is one of the episodes, even at this stage, that I would love people to listen to, because miscarriage and fertility and these topics are so pushed aside in society, and we're so reluctant to talk about them. But without wanting to put too fine a point on it, Kieran, you were on the edge of wanting to end your life because of the fertility process and the fertility journey and the losses that you'd had.
Yeah.
This isn't something that just happens and people move on. It is utterly life-altering. Mm. These, whether it's combined with the fertility journey, whether it's one, whether it's six miscarriages, it doesn't matter. It completely reframes people's existences.
Yeah.
And it's so incredibly brave of you to talk about it. And there are, I've said this to a few people who we've had on who are in similar positions to you now, where it's become almost second nature to share that story and to share those particularly difficult parts of it and to just make it part of a story and part of a conversation. But it really, without wanting to go on, people listening should really understand that this isn't just part of a story. Imagine being in that position because of your fertility or because of a miscarriage. And it's not uncommon. And it's just, I'm so grateful for you to talk about it, A, with me and for this challenge, but just in general and for other men. Like, it's incredibly important and it's incredibly admirable.
Thanks, buddy. It's, like I said, it's something, you've said it. I'm at the point now where I can talk about it. Mm. But even when I do, it's still incredibly tough. Like when I think about that nurse that gave me that hug, even like explaining it then, like I can feel the raw emotion creeping up into my throat. I've just got good at telling the story about breaking up now.
Yep.
And I think for me, the reason why I got so close to the edge was because I generally blame myself for everything. And it wasn't my fault. And any guy listening to this in a similar situation needs to know that. But I do believe what you do in reaction to it is something you can control, and it's something that I learned. And the main thing for me was I perceived that I had no control over the situation. Like, I'd been dealt this card and that was it. But it wasn't until I started taking my lifestyle and things I did into account in terms of I was responsible for them, that's when I started to feel better about the situation. And it's the same with the miscarriage. Like, when you experience it, I distinctly remember on that Boxing Day, just wanted to instantly fix it. And instantly, I didn't know how I could just make everything better. I didn't like the cloud in the room. I didn't like the feeling. I didn't like anything about it. And I just wanted to go back to 40 minutes before when nothing had happened. And that's, you can't, you can't, you've got to sit in that feeling. You've got to sit with it. You've got to allow it to play out for your own good, because otherwise you torment yourself. And it's, I think as men, if something goes wrong in the household, most of the time I can fix it.
Yeah.
Someone's hurt, I can take them to A&E. Bill's not paid, you can get it paid. You know, there's things you can do, everything. There's always something you can do. But with miscarriage, there's not. And you have to, there's a huge amount of processing and acceptance that has to come with it. The only other time where I felt the same way was my wife, her mother was diagnosed with cancer, and it was very quick, and she died very quickly. And it was the same feeling when we got that phone call, she died. It was exactly miscarriage. It's death. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
But do I think going through miscarriage helped the situation with what happened to Jen's mum? It was still tough, but we'd been in a similar position, but those feelings were incredibly familiar. So yeah, it's a horrendous feeling, and it's something, it's a bit like fertility in terms of you can only fully understand it if you've been through it. And it's that feeling of loss and not being able to fix it. It's an incredibly difficult thing. And it's something that I'll always know. I'll know that feeling. And it comes up in life. You lose people, you lose things, and there's things you can't do about it. But Yeah, I guess that's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about this, doing the marathon. It's so people know that there are other people out there that have been through it. And I wish that, obviously, Tommy's was about when I was experiencing it, but as a man, I was closed off to it, wasn't open to it. Didn't even cross my mind to reach out for help to someone else.
Yeah.
And guys need to know they can.
Yeah, absolutely. We've touched on it already in this episode, and it's something I talk about a lot, is trying to break outside of the loss community to try and bring some awareness to the population as a whole as to what could happen as they enter into that pregnancy journey. You've said there, you don't think that you can really understand it unless you've been through it. Do you think we can, do you think we can achieve our goal? Do you think that the message will ever truly resonate with someone? Because I appreciate that conversations like this, challenges like what we're doing, can hopefully really help people who are going through it now or have been through it and are looking for answers and are looking for help. Do you think our mission is futile? Do you think anyone can ever really latch onto a conversation like this and extract value from it, having without the lived experience?
Yes. Yeah, I do. But I don't, the honest truth is you can educate people about it, but people won't. But unless you've actually experienced it, everyone knows it probably, it hurts to be punched in the nose. You can tell someone, people can go, yeah, I can imagine that.
Yeah.
And everyone can imagine it hurts being punched in the nose. But until you've been punched in the nose, you don't know how much it hurts. That's the truth. And it's not because you're being ignorant to it or whatever. It's the fact of it's experiential learning. That's how we've survived for years. But it's, for me, it's about education of youngsters so they know where to get help from. It's the same thing with the male fertility side of stuff. You know, guys need to know, young men need to know where they can get that support. Miscarriage, you need to know where you can get that support. But the statistic that I'm more interested in is making sure that 1 in 4 becomes 1 in 6. That's the stuff in terms of, we need to reduce the amount of miscarriages happening so less people can go through this, you know. So I do think this is, the mission's so valuable, but I just, my wish is that less people need that support.
I'm the same as you. And that's, again, this why I could have chosen to support a group like Nexus. I could have chosen to support the Worst Girl Gang, all who are fantastic organizations doing brilliant things. But it's like we've said before, it's Tommy's are the ones who have that research on, and they're trying to, and I'm sure there are fertility specific research centers within, more focused on the fertility space rather than the miscarriage space.
Yeah.
For me, it was Tommy's because they're, like you say, they're trying to change the numbers rather than just helping more people. And a reminder to everyone that if you are listening to this and you agree with what we're saying and you'd like to donate to Tommy's, please do visit marathonsformiracles.com and click on donate now, and you will support both our challenge and the fantastic work that Tommy's do.
I totally agree. It's about that research. This isn't just about people that have been through it. This is for the people for the future as well. Are going to experience this. It's not going away. It's just about making sure that those numbers can be low as possible in 10, 15, 20 years time.
So, man. You spoke about a feeling of loneliness. You spoke about the scene, if you like, at your mum's house in Devon on Boxing Day, the day after Boxing Day. And you spoke about subsequently when Jen and you processed it together over the coming days. Tell us a bit more about those emotions. I know this is an interesting angle because it's the male specific side of things, I guess. I don't know if there's a question in there, but maybe.
No, I get what you mean. It's, for me, I didn't know what to do. I generally didn't know how to make my wife feel better. And in truth, like, there was nothing I could do. The only thing I could do is be present. And I've learned in life that is sometimes the most powerful thing you can be. It is the most supportive thing you can be, is just present in the moment. So funnily enough, we didn't talk loads about the miscarriage. We just existed together in a quiet world. It came up and I checked she's all right. But the facts were the facts. We knew what had happened. And it was almost like, it was like a sandstorm, and we had to wait for all the sand to settle so we could see how we truly felt.
Yeah.
After that, it was a few days after that we came home. I went home back to Bedfordshire from Devon. And it was during that drive that we talked more about it. about how we felt and how Jen felt, how I felt, what we wanted to do next in terms of treatment and those kind of things. If there's a guys listening to this and they're in that moment, just being present is the best thing you can be.
I hadn't really thought about it that much until you've been talking about it now, but I do now, looking back, remember that sort of week, 2 weeks after our miscarriage. And I'm like you, I'm a real sort of pragmatist, solutions kind of person. It's okay, we've got a problem, what are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
And I remember, I can't think what they might have been, because as you say, there's nothing you can do. But I remember for the first sort of week, few days, trying to be positive and we're going to do this and we're going to do this and this is going to be okay because we can do this about it. And I just remember Amy still being sad.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this isn't working. There were a few days after, as you say, just realized, you know what, just shut up. Yeah. Just let it. And it'll get better in the end.
Yeah. That's what it is. You have to. We think differently to women. That's one of the most beautiful things that exists. Men think differently to women and women think differently to men. And during situations like miscarriage, don't guess what they're thinking. Just go for the ride. I know that sounds bizarre, right?
Is that miscarriage specific? Just don't guess what they're thinking.
I think that's, in fact, don't ever guess.
You wanted to do a spin-off podcast entitled Don't Guess What They're Thinking.
But generally, yeah, don't guess what they're thinking. Like, just be present. And do you know what? I remember there were, like, initially Jen would, she just rolled up in bed. She just wanted to be away and just processing it all. And then gradually she'd, maybe on night one, she was rolling away. She wasn't in the room type of thing. And then gradually, like, she'd roll over and she'd want the interaction, just the cuddle, because she was feeling it. And then I remember distinctly remembering like a lot of hugs, a lot of kisses on the forehead. And it didn't have, you don't have to talk. It's that physical and that just presence. I'm here. And then once like the conversations start occurring, I think it's really important for men to talk openly. I wish I'd talk more openly about how I was feeling, but in all honesty, maybe I just hadn't processed it. I hadn't. Yeah. And it took significantly longer for me, the male, young, immature male brain of mine, to go, there's something wrong here, mate. Yeah. Be present. Presence is key. Yeah.
You mentioned about you had this sort of time off, if you like, the time off the roller coaster before you then decided to have another cycle. And what you did in that time for yourself, for your lifestyle, to improve your chances, to improve your fertility position. And that's obviously since become a very important part of your life. And tell us a bit more about what you learned in that time and where that's led you to now.
Yeah. So I got as low as I could be. And the wife was like, you've got to sort this out. So I started having counseling, and part of that, in that those counseling sessions, it became evident that I had ignored some of the elephants in the room, shall we say, in terms of lifestyle factors and things like that. So I made the conscious decision that I was going to change certain things. So for example, I changed my diet. We ate okay, but we went to an organic diet. I stopped drinking alcohol because alcohol became quite like a crutch. I think that's one of the reasons why I was so low. I was getting pretty drunk most nights because I was just trying to deal with this emotional wreck that I'd become. I wasn't sleeping well. My stress levels were high. For someone who loved exercise and had got a degree in sports science, I'd neglected that. I wasn't doing anything that I would have previously done. I built myself my own little program, an exercise program and nutrition and everything, kind of put it all together and just followed it for 18 months. And my semen analysis like went up significantly. So I'll give people an idea of where it was. That first semen analysis that I had back at the clinic, or the second one I had actually, was they predicted that I had around about 1500 sperm per milliliter. Now most men have towards 15 to 20 million. So I was 1500. They predicted that around or less than 1% of that was viable. So like 15. And after 18 months of living healthily and my mind was back on track, I was feeling good, and my semen analysis had gone up to 4 million and 4% of it was viable. So these things had really made a difference, not just mentally, physically as well. So after Seb was born, I thought, if I need this, surely other guys need it. So that's when I started talking about my story in the fertility world, and I just started helping guys, giving them this kind of program and like putting things together for them, because I had a PT qualification, strength and conditioning qualifications as well. So I thought, oh, I can do this. And then gradually it's grown. And now on Instagram, I'm known as the Male Fertility PT. And so I started doing that. And then I reached out to Sean, and that's where I said to him, do you fancy doing a podcast? Because we'd met. And then we did the podcast, and this community grew behind us, and we were like, we need somewhere to put these guys so they can have all the support that they need, like the PT and like the coaching and just general sense of community, so they didn't feel alone like we both did during their fertility treatment. So they had somewhere that related to miscarriage in relation to so many sectors of it. But miscarriage was one of the things I'm very passionate about, obviously. And it was, so we started Nexus. And it's just, I couldn't have imagined that when I was at my lowest that you'd say to me in 10 years time, mate, you'll be doing this. I would have laughed and then probably said something else that I can't repeat. But it's kind of, it's been a layering system. It all started from me just trying to sort myself out and seeing that it works. And the guys that I've PT'd and got ready for their cycles have had loads of success. And it's a real privilege to, because that's what I really want. That's my aim, is just to give other people the pleasure of being a father. Like, it is such a pleasure. But it's tough, you know. And when I get a message from one of my clients or from someone in the community and say it's gone well and this is happening, like, it makes my day. Like, it truly makes me happy that someone else can experience those joys. But at the same time, I'm ready there to catch someone that needs that support now, because you shouldn't feel on your own when it all goes wrong as well. Yeah, that's in those 18 months, I guess the seeds of Nexus were planted, and it took 10 years to get there, but we've got a lot of big plans. And
yeah. And I've been lucky enough to be involved firstly with a podcast episode and then in one of your panel discussions, and I've seen the community working firsthand, and what you guys are doing is brilliant. And it's always the way, isn't it? It's nice to see people take negative experiences and turn them into positive experiences. They're the best stories to hear.
And if
people are willing to go through something really tough and turn around and look behind them and try and pick those people up and drag them up with them. Yeah, it's really cool to see.
Oh, cheers, man.
I normally at this point ask, what advice would you give to people going through similar experiences? But we've had so many as you've gone, each point you made, you've crystallized it into fantastic advice. I think what I would summarize with is, if people are listening to this and think, that's me, I need some help, where can they find Nexus and where can they find you? And we'll obviously put all this stuff in the show notes as well.
If people literally just want to reach out to me on Instagram, it's the Male Fertility PT. They can also email me at the Male Fertility PT at gmail.com. And there's obviously the podcast, which is the Male Fertility Podcast on Instagram, or the Male Fertility Podcast at gmail.com. And then there's Nexus, which is Nexus Fertility on Instagram, or they can send me a message straight at Kieran@nexusfertility.com. And even if it's just a case of a chat, always willing to jump on a call with someone. Because it can be the first step for them to get that true support. And of course, there's guys out there listening to this going through fertility challenges. There's a Nexus community. And if you go to www.nexusfertility.com, you can join the community there. And it's like a WhatsApp group that we've got, and webinars and all kinds of things. So yeah, come and see us, come and join us. And it'd be a pleasure to have anyone come in. All right.
Fantastic. So you're a PT, you've done a sports science degree.
Yeah.
Got yourself in shape after your miscarriage. So marathon, walk in the park.
Should we talk about it?
Go on.
Yeah.
How has it been? I'm going to start this bit because I think you are the first person.
Yeah.
And this is at week 12. You are the first person who genuinely, when you agreed to do this, would not class yourself as a runner in any way, shape or form.
No.
Like we've had like everyone who's run with us so far to varying degrees has run, has run like a half marathon at least. Some of them are like nutters, as you've seen, like 2 hour 30 marathon guys and stuff. Kieran jumped at this and then told me 2 days later, I don't even know if you owned a pair of running shoes.
I didn't. I bought my first running shoes.
Big hats off.
I bought my first running shoes at Christmas.
Yeah.
But I had been running. I had started to run. Proper running shoes, shall we say. I invested in some Brooks. So I was like, buy some.
We like Brooks. I'm a Brooks man. If Brooks are listening and they want to endorse the challenge, you're very welcome.
100%. 100%. I think we should definitely tag this in it. Anyone listening to this, social media, tag Brooks. Let's get them involved.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I used to do a lot of cycling. I love downhill mountain biking. So that was my thing. I played rugby as well. So, you know, body was taking a battering and all counts. And then through rugby, I've had several serious injuries, especially I was describing them before we came, like left legs. My left leg is just a mess. Like I've had broken ankle twice. I've had it cemented back together. I've had a tibia fibia break. The list just goes on and it's just taken its toll. But during my fertility journey, I stopped mountain biking because it was the thing that you shouldn't do. So I started to do more powerlifting and things like that. And then 2019, was it? Yeah, it was just before the first lockdown. Was that? I can't remember. It's so long ago. Anyway, I had another ankle break and ended up having to have it all reconstructed. And at that point, they were like, look, we need to fuse your ankle. You can't never run. You'd never be able to run again. I was like, no, I think I was 35 at the time. I was like, I'm too young for that. Do not fuse my ankle. So they repaired it as best as possible. And I was basically told, oh, you'll never run again or do any running. So I hadn't. And then in July, I've gone, yeah, I'll do a marathon. So I've had to really take it slowly. Like I've had to prepare my legs. I've had to do a lot of physio. I've had to just get things ready. And you know, I did 18 miles the other week and it was an amazing achievement for me. I learned several things in terms of, long distance prep during 18 miles.
Yeah.
But I can do it. I can do it. It is like I'm generally in pain. Like it's not just me going, oh, it's a bit uncomfortable. Like if once I get to that 15, even now, like I run 3 miles, I'm in pain. I did nine, 10 miles the other day and it hurt. But the reason I'm doing it, like this is one roll of the dice for me, I think, marathon wise. So I'm going to do it. I'm doing it for a good reason. One and out. I keep seeing on the group, let's do another one. It's like, no, one and out. But just because of all the pain, literally the pain inside that I went through my fertility journey, through the miscarriages, like I will get over that line. Doesn't matter if we have to walk that last 5 miles. I'm getting over the line, mate. I'm coming. I might need crutches by the end of it and a stretcher, but we're going to get there. I do think we'll run over the line. I think it's going to be fine. But yeah, it's been a challenge. It has been a challenge, but one I've enjoyed. And you know what? It's actually, it's motivated me to get back in the gym really seriously. Like I'm 40 in May.
Yeah.
And although I train guys all the time and have a lot of time in the gym, I haven't always prioritized myself, but this has made me go, do you know what, mate? You're 40. Let's crack on. Let's get in good shape again. And I've decided I'm going to dust off the old bike and maybe do a challenge around that at some point. But right now I'm 10 days out of my first and probably last marathon, but that's how I became a runner. And I noticed that I was the first one that doesn't really run.
We've got a little. I think it is mostly blokes as well. Yeah. Actually, this group of, as much as you can have a corner in a WhatsApp group, we've got a group of blokes who are in the corner. Now someone will mention something, it'll be like, "What on earth are you talking about? What is this?" You're the ones that I take my hat off to most, and everyone's doing it with similar motivations to you. It's not what comes naturally to me, but I heard what you were doing and I had to be involved.
Yeah, that's what I said.
It means a hell of a lot. So
it was as soon as Sean prompted it, I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And then that was, I didn't even think. It was just like, yeah, I want to do it. But it's going to be an amazing day. And I think that if I can get around about the 5 hour mark, I'll be happy. Like generally will be.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. See what happens on the day.
Yeah.
And
where are we going? What are we doing? What do the places mean to you?
So we are running because I didn't live in Bedford for long. So it's worth building this out really. Cause originally I'm from Kingston and then we moved to Brighton when I was young and gradually we moved up the country.
Cause you live up in.
Near Leeds. I live near Leeds now. And we moved to Bedford because Jen got a job as a health visitor up here, a trainee health visitor. And we were here for maybe 4 years, there for 4 years. But in that time, we went throughout the majority of our treatment and my son was born and Seb was born. And so it holds a lot of memories for us in quite a tight space of time.
Yeah.
So we're going to be running out of Bedford and down towards the village that we used to live in. We lived in two main villages, but we're running in down into Ampt Hill and finishing in Clop Hill. And Clop Hill was where I went. So if we start up by the hospital where Seb was born, when I got thrown out of the hospital that night, I went down to Clop Hill to be with friends, but go to the pub that we're finished at. Because for me, it was like, it's a poignant moment in my fertility journey.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it, man. I was looking at the route that you sent us and I was just like, oh yeah, I know that. Anywhere I can get my little stops in where we can do this. It's going to literally be a run down memory lane for me because we haven't been back for 9 years.
Like, who knew that memory lane was 26 miles long?
It feels longer than that, mate. But it's going to be an absolute epic run. And then, definitely brings back some amazing memories.
You requested that weekend specifically fairly early on.
Seb was born on the 16th of March and it was the closest weekend we could get. So I expect they would have arrived earlier being twins, even though Seb was a month and a bit early. It would have been twins' birthday as well in my mind.
Yeah.
It's an important date. When you put the thing out, I was like, I want that one. I sent you the message. I was like, I want this one, block it out.
Yeah.
But he is also, Seb's request to join us that last mile, which for me means a lot. So he wants to run 1 mile because he's aware of his twin and he talks about it and it's an important part of life for him. Not in a sad way. He just respectfully acknowledges them and he wants to run that 1 mile for them. So he said, I don't know if I'll keep up. I said, mate, by 25 miles, you'll definitely keep up with dad, mate.
Yeah. You'd be absolutely right. To be fair, you could probably do the last 10.
Yeah, to be fair, if we bring a wheelbarrow, you can kind of just push me along.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, he's going to join us.
That'll be so cool.
Yeah.
I think join us.
If I cry Poppy, that last
Poppy
mile.
Often, yeah, I think that'll be, we've had a few tears along the way. Poppy often is at the finish and then runs towards me. Mate. And that's made me well up a few times.
Yeah.
Mostly because sometimes she spots me very early.
Yeah.
So she gets to me with a couple of hundred meters to go.
Yeah, yeah, man.
And then I have to carry her back to the finish line. I'm like, this is like just the last thing that I need at this stage in proceedings.
Obviously,
it is an extra few kilos, but you know what? It's, you don't even notice.
It's kilos worth carrying, isn't it?
Yeah, right?
Then I spent 10 years because I do have a daughter as well now. We went through another round of treatment and that's when our third miscarriage happened, but I felt I was in a better position to cope with it then. But she'll be at the finish line, I'm sure, with a non-alcoholic beer sat there waiting for dad, I hope, because I haven't drunk for years now, mainly because of all my other issues I've had in terms of coping with it all. But yeah, I can't wait. That's going to be a good sip of a good beer.
I can't wait. As I said, this evening feels like a sort of a full circle moment for the challenge. And it's been, as ever, an absolute pleasure talking to you. And hopefully everyone can take a lot from this evening's episode. I hate to make this podcast feel exploitative in any way, but the point is to acknowledge the very tough times, but obviously try and help people to extract some education from it and some common ground and some awareness, some learning. Material aplenty in there, Kieran. You're a phenomenal bloke. And what you and Sean do is fantastic.
Thank you, my friend. This means a lot. It means a lot coming from you because, like I said at the beginning, mate, what you're doing is phenomenal. And I can't wait. It will be the last time I turn those shoes on, but I can't wait to the full week.
We'll have a ceremonial burning in the big one.
That's it. I might put them on Vinted or something, get rid of them. All right, mate.
I can't wait. We'll see you in Bedford, and good luck with the last week or so of prep.
We're confident. We're confident we'll get there.
Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. As always, if you want to reach out and contact us, you can do so via Instagram at the Mouth to the TPT for me, or the Mouth to the T podcast. We'll be back next week as normal. Look forward to it. Speak to you then.